Well, first I want to congratulate Samuel for his youthful interest in philosophy. I think it is wonderful to see someone so young interested in philosophical issues and attempting to make sense of the world in a rational way. I want to say to Samuel that I hope you will continue to push your philosophical understanding of the world to deeper and deeper levels, which you will do if you do not stop asking why. That is, if you continue to seek deeper and more comprehensive answers to the fundamental questions of philosophy. The initial impetus for this debate is a paper that I wrote, which was published last June by infidels.org, an atheist site on the World Wide Web. In that paper, I defended the cosmological argument for God's existence against an objection by Richard Carrier. Carrier holds that science has been so successful in explaining and making sense of the universe that there is no longer any explanatory need to suppose a God exists. My paper was titled Contra Carrier: Theism is Needed to Make Sense of Everything. In the short time I have available, I will present and defend a scaled-down version of the argument I presented in that paper, a cosmological argument for the existence of God. My argument presupposes that you understand two preliminary ideas, the notion of explanatory reasoning and the distinction between the necessary and the contingent. Both ideas can be traced back to the beginning of philosophy. Both originated apart from any specifically theistic context, and both can be motivated apart from theistic considerations. So first, explanatory reasoning. In an act of explanatory reasoning, we begin with facts that need explaining, and then we decide what to infer by thinking about what would best explain those facts. For instance, while walking on the beach one morning, I see many empty beer bottles, I see empty food containers, I see garbage, and I conclude that although I wasn't there, sometime in the recent past, some people had a party on that spot on the beach. A doctor sees spots on a patient's face, detects other symptoms, and concludes that the best explanation is that the patient has chickenpox. Einstein used explanatory reasoning to argue for both his special and general theories of relativity. And at the end of The Origin of Species, Darwin argued for his theory of evolution on the grounds that it is the best explanation of the data in question. Explanatory reasoning, where we decide what to infer from facts by thinking about what would best explain them, is pervasive in every branch of science, in historical investigation, in philosophy. All of the great philosophical arguments are explanatory arguments. I can think of no exceptions. And in nearly every academic discipline, explanatory reasoning is also pervasive in the courtroom, in the field of medicine, in the field of forensics, and in everyday life. So, explanatory reasoning begins with facts that need explaining, and we decide what to infer by thinking about what would best explain the facts. Next, the second preliminary idea is the distinction between the necessary and the contingent. In everyday language, the root meaning of necessary is cannot possibly be otherwise, and the root meaning of contingent is dependent on something else. The pre-Socratic philosophers were the first to give philosophical expression to this distinction by applying it to both the truth and falsity of propositions and to existence or being. But Aristotle was the first to develop the idea in a theoretical and systematic way in his early treatises on logic, the first treatises on logical theory ever written. Along with the mainstream of the Western philosophical tradition, I take very seriously the distinction between the modes of necessity and contingency as applied to propositions in classical modal logic and to existence in quantified modal logic. So I'll be using those two ideas, explanatory reasoning and the distinction between the necessary and the contingent, a philosophical distinction going back to the beginning of philosophy. The cosmological argument for God's existence is perhaps the most historically significant philosophical argument ever given for God's existence. It was first given by Plato, and then by Aristotle in a different form, and it appears in the writings of philosophers up to the present day. Now, here is a short presentation of the modal form of the argument, boiled down to the bare essentials. I begin with the definition. By the physical universe, I shall mean the complete sum of all existing things composed of matter. Thus, the material universe is a large collection of particles and fields composed of or reducible to quanta of mass energy. Second, the contingency of the universe. I agree with physicists such as Stephen Hawking and Steven Weinberg, both Nobel laureates, that each individual particle and field composing the physical universe is logically contingent. But the claim that matter is contingent can also be supported by appeal to current cosmological theory as follows. The latest inflationary Big Bang theories hold that all matter came into existence at a moment in time in the past. But if something came into existence, it is contingent. Moreover, whether or not the latest inflationary Big Bang model is the correct account, the model is logically coherent, which is to say, it is possible it is true, and therefore, it is reasonable to suppose that it's at least possible that all matter came into existence at a point in time in the past. And therefore, matter, it follows, must be contingent because anything that could have come into existence is contingent. Incidentally, even if one adopts the latest no-boundary quantum cosmologies, theories that give us a universe having no beginning or end in time and no edge in space, it is still reasonable to suppose the universe is contingent, even if it has an infinite past. For the following reason, if we can coherently conceive of a state of affairs in which some X does not exist, in which something other than X exists, then we have reasonable grounds for holding that X exists contingently. But we can coherently conceive of alternative possible worlds. That's what modal logic is all about. Therefore, even if the physical universe has no beginning in time, it is reasonable to believe that it exists contingently. Step three, the question. One of the oldest philosophical questions, and perhaps the most fundamental philosophical question of all, is surely why is there something rather than nothing? In other words, what accounts for the fact that a material universe exists? The historian Bertram Wolff, who died in 1977, wonderfully expressed this question in his autobiography, A Life in Two Centuries. It's a very touching book about his life as first as a communist in the communist underground and then as leaving communism and becoming a noted academic historian. And there's a touching point in his autobiography where he says, talking about his youth, there was one large problem that I tackled that I could not solve at 11 or 12 and have not solved yet, nor do I expect to. Why does the universe exist at all? What if the universe did not exist? The more I wrestled with such problems, at 12 years old, the more I wrestled with such problems, the less I could explain to myself, until at last I was driven to the question of questions. Why is there something? Why is there anything? Why is there not nothing? Step four, application of explanatory reasoning. Can science answer our question? Consider, science always explains one thing within the physical universe in terms of the laws of nature and something else within the physical universe, which in turn is explained in terms of something else within the physical universe, and so on. Or more broadly, science explains the current state of the physical universe in terms of the laws of nature and the immediately preceding state, which in turn is explained in terms of the immediately preceding state, and so on back and back. In other words, science gives us an explanatory regress in which one thing is explained in terms of something prior, which is explained in terms of something prior, and so on. But it just won't do to explain one part of the universe in terms of some more fundamental material part, for that would only explain the contingent in terms of the contingent, leaving the explanatory regress rationally incomplete. To stop our explanations with the contingent is to stop philosophizing too soon. Here is why. Suppose an explanatory regress ends in something logically contingent. By its nature, this logically contingent thing has the possibility of non-existence. It might not have existed had things been different. That is, among the set of all logically possible states of affairs, there is the possibility it does not exist. But the possibility of its non-existence logically supports the question, why does it exist? And so, if the thing is contingent, the explanation of its existence will refer to something external to it that caused it to exist. For example, if someone asked why that large tree exists across the way, the answer would be, it was planted 50 years ago and took root and grew. So the explanation of a contingent thing cannot be completely internal to it. Otherwise, the thing would be ontologically independent of all else and thus necessary and not contingent. In other words, no contingent entity can be by itself self-explanatory. So if an explanatory regress in which one thing is explained in terms of a prior thing bottoms out in something purely contingent, then live questions pertaining to existence at that bottom level will always remain unanswered. Thus, no purely contingent entity could ever serve as an adequate regress break or rationally satisfying explanation. On the other hand, suppose the explanatory regress, starting with why does the universe exist, ends in something necessary, in a necessary ground of being. Does this endpoint, by its intrinsic nature, also raise its own unanswerable questions of existence, thus also precluding a rationally acceptable explanatory stopping point? Richard Carrier thinks so. In 10 Things Wrong with Creationism, he offers a general argument against any theistic explanatory argument. Carrier writes, if we posit a God, we would still be in the same position of trying to explain his existence. The claim here is that positing God to explain the existence of the physical universe, the contingent universe, does not get us any nearer to explanatory closure, and hence is explanatorily superfluous, since it raises the same unanswerable question of existence that the contingent universe raised, namely, why does it exist? But this is wrong. Recall that a necessary being, by explanatory hypothesis, is a being whose intrinsic nature is such that its non-existence is impossible. This means that in the case of, and only in the case of, a necessary being, if there were one, there is a logically sufficient explanation for its existence. As the philosopher Peter van Inwagen so succinctly put it in his recent textbook on metaphysics, there could hardly be a more satisfactory explanation for the existence of a thing than that its non-existence was logically impossible. And that's something we can say in reply to the question, why does it exist if it's asked of a necessary being? That's not an answer we can give if the question is asked of a contingent being. The following thought experiment may help motivate the point. Suppose you go to a friend's house to watch TV, and all evening the only channel you see is ABC. Finally, around 11 p.m., you ask, why must we watch ABC all night? Your friend answers, the set is broken. No matter what channel you turn the dial to, it only shows ABC. It can't show any other channel. Now, hasn't your friend provided a perfectly acceptable answer to the question? Now you understand why the TV shows ABC. It shows ABC because it necessarily must. It can't show any other. I think the general principle is the following. If someone is wondering why something is actually so and not otherwise, and they learn that it is necessarily so and cannot possibly be otherwise, then they have a rationally acceptable explanation for why it is actually so. Notice that the explanation for the existence of a necessary being, as put by Van Inwagen, does not refer to any other being or circumstance external to the being. This is why a necessary ground of being at the end of an explanatory regress, unlike a contingent one, raises no unanswerable questions of existence and therefore constitutes a rationally acceptable closure for an explanatory regression. In short, only if the explanatory regress that begins with why does the universe exist terminates in a metaphysically necessary ground of being, does it bottom out at a rationally acceptable end. The theoretically lovely aspect of the theistic explanatory hypothesis, by the way, is that it gives us a self-subsuming explanation of the whole universe, an explanation that, if true, would explain both itself and the existence of all contingent being. Now, that's true explanatory closure, at least with respect to the existence of the contingent universe. Conclusion. By applying ordinary explanatory reasoning to one of the most fundamental and significant philosophical questions of all time, and by refusing to stop the search for explanations until we reach a rationally acceptable stopping point, we can see that the only available explanation for the existence of the contingent universe is this: the physical universe owes its existence to a necessary ground of being. Thus, it is reasonable to suppose God exists, where by the term God I just mean that being responsible for the existence of the universe. And following Occam's razor, I postulate the bare minimum needed to explain the phenomenon, which in this case means positing just one necessary being. To posit any larger number would be to invoke unnecessary explanatory entities. So boiled down to its essentials, the cosmological argument takes up the question, why does the universe exist? The conclusion is that we can only make adequate sense of the existence of the universe if we suppose it owes its existence to something beyond itself, namely to a necessary ground of being. To paraphrase Thomas Aquinas, this being we call God. In conclusion of my remarks, when I started my remarks, I expressed the hope that you will not stop asking questions, but instead continue to ask why, continue to seek deeper and more comprehensive answers to the fundamental questions of philosophy. If the cosmological argument is sound, and I believe it is, then your quest to make comprehensive philosophical sense of the world, when pushed as far as reason can go, will take you, I believe, to the metaphysically necessary ground of being, to a rational belief in the existence of God.
Find God, as I was at the beginning today. By the term God, you mean, you said on your definitions paperwork here, that being responsible for the existence of the physical universe. Do you deny the Webster definition of God?
I don't deny the Webster definition, but definitions are neither true nor false. They're used in various ways.
Yeah.
The definition I give is what I think is supported by my argument. So my argument only attempts to establish a very limited conclusion, namely that God, as defined there, exists.
So do you or do you not believe in the God by the definition as the dictionary puts it?
Actually, I am a full-blown theist. I do think that there is a being who is omnipotent, omniscient, and has the other attributes traditionally assigned to deity, to divinity.
And
but my argument doesn't support that. To support that,
so your argument doesn't support actual definition of God, is what you're saying?
As Webster may define it.
Okay,
I'm only arguing for a limited definition.
So you're arguing for this redefined definition of God, or this portion of the definition of God.
Right.
Alright, so definition of God in the dictionary is not what you're presenting you today.
That's right.
So theism means belief in God, correct?
Well, it depends on how you define God. There are many different varieties of theism.
Okay. And according to the worldly regarded definition of theism, it means belief in God. And by belief in God, it means belief in the God of the dictionary.
The word theism in most philosophy books is not defined. It's defined in various ways. It's the belief in some kind of a supreme being that is responsible for the existence of the world.
Okay.
That's a fairly traditional definition.
That's the definition for theism. It doesn't actually involve the word God.
I would define, theism, the word theism comes from the Greek word for God, theos. And there are many ways to define God. And I am defining God in my argument simply as that being which is responsible for the existence of the universe. I think another argument would have to be given to go further and add further attributes to the definition.
But I'm asking if theism is God, belief in God.
If theism is belief in God, where God is defined simply as that which is responsible for the universe, the existence of the physical universe,
Okay. Then
I'll accept that I'm giving an argument for theism.
So the argument for actual definition of theism as for the actual definition of God is not what you're presenting here today?
Yes.
So when you say theism is needing to make sense of everything, you mean your version of theism?
Yes, I mean this minimal explanatory statement of theism.
Right. So, a being responsible for the existence of physical universe, what do you mean by being?
I mean by being anything that has existence.
So
this is a being, and this pen is a being, so the word being doesn't necessarily connote personality or will or intelligence.
Okay.
It just connotes existence.
So it could be considered anything that is the initial start of the universe. So the Big Bang, you could be calling God right now.
No, because the Big Bang is a contingent event that happened in time. And
for example, you know what I'm saying. An existence of something.
Well, the Big Bang is part of the physical universe, so it wouldn't...
So it doesn't necessarily have to have intelligence or will or... In your essay, you said something along the lines, or it was actually asked of you, and you responded to it. It was asked of you that different worlds could be created by this God, and you admitted this, correct? Different worlds could be created by this God, thus the worlds are contingent. And that would mean the act of creation would be contingent, but you said that isn't exactly so because of one of God's attributes. What was that attribute?
Well, no, I asserted the full contingency of creation in that article.
Yes, so you admit that he could have created any universe, and what the universe might have been is completely contingent.
Yes, in response to the reviewer, I went with the traditional theistic claim that the creation of the universe is itself a contingent act.
The creation is a contingent act.
Yes.
So God's necessity doesn't actually explain the contingent universe then, once it is apart from the act of creation.
Sure, it does.
How does it?
Well, when we trace our explanations back, we trace them back to the as far as they can go in terms of contingent entities. And then we realize that we haven't finished explaining things because our explanatory bottom is itself raises further questions. And so we then refer to a deeper level.
So how you explain the contingency of the universe is with the contingency of the creation. But if the act of creation is contingent, then, as you said, that doesn't actually explain the universe.
Well, let me explain. If I said that the creation of the universe was necessary and not contingent, then the universe is no longer contingent, it's necessary.
Mm-hmm.
And so the theist has to say that the act of creation is itself contingent, if he also asserts the contingency of the universe. So I assert the contingency of the creation, but the creation is attributed to a being, and that being...
So there's a portion of this application that is necessary.
Well, it's the part that's necessary is where the act of creation comes from. See,
okay.
We have to ask what is it that's creating this universe,
so
and that is where we get to the necessary being.
So it was necessary. So what was necessary in God for creating the universe?
Oh, it's not necessarily created. It's created.
So he could have decided not to create.
That's correct, and that's why the universe is contingent.
So the creation of the universe, that very act of creation, does not actually explain the universe at all. It's just that we just assert that God is.
Well, sure it does. Let me ask you this. Suppose you see this elephant sitting on this bench, on this table over here, and you wonder why it's there. And I explain that Jenner built it at home as one of his art projects and placed it there. Doesn't that explain why it's there?
It would explain why it's there, but what I'm asking is, I have a problem attributing that metaphor. I'm asking is that if God is the necessity of creating the universe wasn't actually a necessity of creating the universe.
The creation act is a free act.
The universe's explanation for creation is a contingent explanation, and that explanation is also contingent in whether or not God decided to do it. So ultimately, there is no necessity for the universe to come into existence at all.
That's fine, I agree with that. But that doesn't mean that we haven't traced things back to a necessary ground of being thing. Because what we have traced it back to is something that's necessary that created it in a pre-act of creation. And so we've still traced things back to a necessary ground of being. Albeit a necessary ground of being that involves a choice, that makes a choice to create. But we still resolve things down to a necessary ground of being. And by the way, it's interesting that when we explain the universe as the result of a choice, we're using an explanatory device that we're all familiar with. All of us understand what it is for something to be created by a choice of
a person. I have another question. You said that the universe, he explains the physical universe. Mm-hmm. Physical, you admit, is the jumbled up of energy, right?
Ultimately, mass energy. Mass energy.
Yeah, ultimately, we break things down if it gets to energy. So,
mass energy.
Okay. So, the facts of reality, laws of physics, the laws of logic, time, space, is all that also created by the deity?
That's a very good question.
Remember, the result is demons and he makes sense of everything. So, how did God create these other objects?
The traditional theistic answer, now this goes beyond what I tried to argue in my paper, but traditional theistic answer is to attribute all that's metaphysically necessary to God's nature.
To God's nature?
Yeah. In other words, God is the creator of all that's contingent, and then everything that's necessary is either reflective of or due to God's nature.
So, you can prove that God must have created all these other attributes of the universe.
Well, I would have to give a separate explanatory argument.
Well, in order to support the resolve, I would have to, yes.
It would take another argument to give an argument for deriving abstract entities and logic and mathematics and all that from a theistic source.
Okay.
Yeah. So it is interesting. My argument was only intended to show that the physical universe can't be explained without a metaphysically necessary being.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'll go to that, but
I'm interpreting everything to mean the physical universe around us.
You're interpreting the word everything to mean
the physical universe around us.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. 2 minutes to be ready for your speech.
Dr. Paul Herrick has redefined God to mean a being responsible for the existence of the physical universe. That actual definition in the dictionary is a being conceived as perfect, originator of and ruler of the universe, the principal object of faith and worship in monotheistic religions. Yeah. He has not asserted or supported many of the aspects of this definition. And as he hopefully said, he has redefined God as just a part of that definition to assert here today. Theism is, of course, required belief in a God, God as defined by many of you, I assume, take this definition from the dictionary. This is the widely regarded definition of God. It's the English language. Theism is belief in that God. And therefore, the result is theism is needed to make sense of everything. Technically, the result is therefore false because of the words parts being changed during the debate. However, he said he was redefining these terms, and I will continue the debate as such, as he's defining God, and now he's also redefining the word everything. Everything is now a physical universe, which makes me wonder why he chose to say everything in his essay instead of the physical universe. Out of his essay was, of course, the result here today, that theism is needed to make sense of everything. I believe that he should have titled it, Theism is Needed to Make Sense of the Physical Universe. For some reason, his assertions are being supported with things that aren't working toward his actual assertions. But that's all right. I'll continue the debate under these definitions. Everything is needed to, God is needed to make sense of the physical universe. God as in a being responsible for the existence. One second here. Says it is the best explanation that this is, that he is a necessity. That in order to explain the universe, ultimately you will go back into regressive explanation and explanation, and you need something to ground it, something that is self-evident, so to speak. First of all, I wonder why you actually need a necessity. Why can't the initial creation of the universe be random? Of course, this wouldn't be an explanation that would satisfy everybody, but it is possible. Is it possible that there was nothing and then suddenly were something? I don't see any proof otherwise. But that aside, God is the best explanation, asserts Dr. Paul Perry. I assert that it is the absolute worst explanation of human being to possibly fathom. For example, say there is an existence, an act of creation, like the Big Bang, out of nowhere, which his God seems to have come from. Actually, he asserts his God was always around, which is still kind of thinly out of nowhere. Say we have just the Big Bang. It's just pure energy, and eventually it jumbles together and creates matter, and so on and so forth. Natural selection takes over his life, and it reaches the complexity of even human brain. That is an explanation. It's not proven, but it's an explanation. And it is very simple. It is sheer energy coming from a singularity point. God is not simple. Dr. Herrick did assert in his essay that he believed God is extremely simple. He asserted that this was because complexity is defined by many parts, and God being just an entity would not have any parts. However, parts are not defined as physical parts. Parts are defined as portions of a whole. This God would have to have the ability, the resources, the knowledge. You have to have all this information in order to result in the creation of the universe. All this ability, all this power, this magic. This is as complex as the universe and then some. This is not an explanation. This makes things worse. Just even the universe coming to existence by itself with no explanation whatsoever, just universe. Even that would be a better explanation than God. It'd be a terrible explanation, but it's better than God. Because God is that complex and then some. I am not saying, of course, that there is no entity that one can call God. However, let's say there is no evidence for this, and this is a very bad theory. It's definitely not the inference to the best explanation. He said everything as in terms of the physical universe, which is interesting. The physical universe is pretty much everything that is mass energy, everything that is physical or energy that can eventually create physical, pretty much like the Big Bang spits out. He does not account for the explanation of time. He does not account for laws of physics or any of that other stuff. He believes that these can be attributed to this God as properties or so forth. However, there is problems with the assertion of time. Time cannot be created at all. God, by definition, even his definition, I believe, would have to have created time, ultimately. And time cannot be created because there was no time when time did not exist. Time always was and time always will be. Time cannot be come into existence. If there was a moment when time did not exist, if there is anything that exists outside of time, it is frozen. So if there is a God, then he is enslaved in time as much as any of us. He says God is a necessary being. I wanted to get to this in my cross-examination, but I didn't have time. He said that God was a necessary being, but I'd like to ask, why that God instead of another God? Why does he exist instead of a different God, a God that would have chosen to create a different universe, a God that is, that Heraclides in his essay, that God is a loving God? Why not a hateful God? Why not a spiteful God? Why isn't this God this way? If he is, it seems to me that this God is contingent. This God could have been different. I cannot see any evidence or proof otherwise. I cannot see any evidence or proof why God would have to be this way. He would have to prove God would have to be in this certain format in order to prove his necessity. He could assert the existence of just a God as being a necessity. However, even that, as I said, is not the best explanation. Even that, as I said, is not, doesn't actually, why is God's non-existence impossible? That's what I want to ask. Why can't we stop at contingent? Why can't we say there could have not been a God, there could have been a God? Why could there have not been nothing? Why could the universe not have never existed and God never existed? Why is God necessary? Is everything contingent, is what I'm asking. I need to see evidence and proof. Solid reasoning. Dr. Paul Herrick said, do not stop asking why, and I am asking why. Why is this God this way? Why does this God exist? Why is he necessary? Why is he a better explanation than just the bald creation of the universe coming forth out of nothing? How is he simple? Just because he isn't physical. I'm asking questions, and I want answers. And, sorry, my paper's a mess. All right. I guess I'm done. I'm not sure. I believe that there are laws of physics. I believe there are like laws of non-prediction, time, so on and so forth. But that's as much as I know. Mm-hmm.
But do you consider laws of physics something beyond the physical universe, something outside the physical universe?
I believe it's properties to do with the physical universe.
That's fine.
So if the physical universe can exist, the properties will exist.
Okay, so they're supervenient on them, or they're dependent on them?
Sort of. Way.
They're connected to the physical universe.
Yes, that's likely.
Okay. But, so then, you don't think there's anything that exists completely independently of the physical universe?
There might be something.
We agree on that, but do you know of anything that might be independent of the physical universe?
I'm not thinking about it at the moment.
Fine. Now, time, mathematics, the laws of physics,
yes.
All the things that we call abstract objects are abstract things. You consider those to be in some way bound up with the physical universe.
In some way, yes.
Fine. So when I claim that we need to posit a necessary being to explain the physical universe, then by your own admission, my explanatory posit covers all the things that you asked me to support with an explanatory argument.
I would have
physics, laws of mathematics, time, and all those things.
In a couple ways, actually, you have to prove some couple things. First, you have to actually prove by saying that it's likely and say it was.
Mm-hmm.
You have to prove that it is. They are connected in necessary physical universe.
Mm-hmm.
You have to prove that it would be able to create a physical universe and then have those properties somehow come from those physical objects. They did have to maybe, if they were created at all, would have to come simultaneously.
Okay,
in which case, I would have to.
But we're losing my point. When I said that we have to posit something necessary to explain the physical universe,
okay.
Atheists, all the atheists I know, consider the physical universe to include the laws of physics, the laws of mathematics, all the abstract stuff.
Okay.
And so I intended the explanation to cover all of that. So I think your question...
So you believe all this came into existence, right?
Well, there are cosmological theories, including Hawking's, that posit time as having come into existence.
So how could time possibly come into existence?
Well, that's a question you'll have to ask the quantum physicists. But here's an interesting point. Well, Hawking's theory says that time comes into existence.
Okay.
So if a physicist thinks time comes into existence, then that's just one more thing that a necessary being is positive to explain.
Okay. Can you actually prove that how he did it? That he did it?
Oh, well, the mechanism is not required for this argument. That would be a secondary argument. Second of all, Richard Carrier says that we can make sense of everything without God.
Mm-hmm.
And my article was a reply to him. Hence my argument's title, Theism is Needed to Make Sense of Everything. Well, Richard Carrier does not try to make sense in the argument I was replying to of things like abstract objects, the laws of mathematics, and so forth. He's specifically concerned with the physical universe.
That's not necessary because the Big Bang could account for all.
Okay.
And
so,
see any reason why.
So the Big Bang is a singularity.
Yes.
And has no cause.
Yeah.
And you're satisfied with an explanatory end at something that has no cause.
God has no cause. You are satisfied with God when he has no cause.
Well, let me change my statement. You're satisfied with something that has no explanation for its existence.
And what was God's explanation for its existence?
Well, you could hardly have a better answer to the question, why does X exist, than that X's existence is impossible.
So you were defining...
Then that X's non-existence is impossible.
So you're saying God exists because one of his properties is that he must exist.
No.
But
That's not what's being claimed.
Okay, so how is God's non-existence impossible?
It's an explanatory posit. A necessary being is posited.
My explanatory posit is to be made.
As a being... whose non-existence is impossible, just like a quark is positive even though it can't be seen, as a being that has various types of properties. Let me ask you a second question, because I'm asking the questions here. Carrier says that he can explain, that physics can explain everything without reference to God. My article was a response to Carrier. Therefore, the word everything in my article carries the same meaning it does in Carrier's. And Carrier is only interested in explaining the physical universe in his article. So I think that I stand vindicated that by the word everything, I mean the...
This sounds like a justification and not a question.
Okay, well, I'm asking you if by the physical... My main question is, by the physical universe, do you include things like the laws of physics, the laws of...
I would probably not consider them physical.
But are they part of the physical universe?
I think they're related to the physical universe. They have relations with it.
Then those would be among the things that the theorist thinks his hypothesis proves. So if your car had a dent in it, and it was parked next to mine, and the paint from my car was on your car's dent, and you asked me, how did this dent get here? And I said, you know what, nothing caused it at all. It's a random event that happened. Would you be satisfied with that as an explanation?
No.
Why not?
Because it needed a reason.
Because it needs...
Yeah.
Okay.
If you went ahead and said a baseball bat caused it, and then I would question that. Need proof that a baseball bat caused it.
Mm-hmm.
Just because you pose the baseball bat doesn't mean I'm satisfied.
But you're not satisfied with no explanation for something.
When I don't know the answer, and when the answer does not meet all of it, isn't beyond reasonable doubt, then I'm not yet satisfied.
Okay. So now, to take the universe back to a singularity that itself has no explanation, why doesn't that also not satisfy you?
It doesn't fully satisfy me, but as far as I know, God doesn't satisfy me for exactly the same reasons.
Okay, so it doesn't fully satisfy you. So then if someone could show you an explanation of that was more satisfying, would you adopt it?
an explanation, more satisfying. Mm-hmm. I would thought.
You would. Mm-hmm. So if someone can show you that the by positing a necessary being with all the qualities that necessity involves, could explain why that is there. That
if would just satisfy. Going to be a Big Bang and more complex and more unlikely.
Well, Big Bang.
I don't see why it's more necessary, why it's more likely to be than the Big Bang.
Well, Big Bang is a contingent thing.
Okay, I think God might have been a contingent thing. So,
well, maybe, but what we have here
is an explanatory
hypothesis. We have an explanatory hypothesis here that God's necessary. So,
you have a hypothesis that God is necessary, but you don't actually have proof that it's necessary.
No, it's an explanatory argument.
So it's just an explanation, just like the Big Bang.
That's right.
So
exactly.
So
what should be judged on the same standard?
So here's a hypothesis: the Big Bang is necessary.
How can a contingent thing be necessary?
I go back to ask about God. God might be contingent. How could he be necessary?
Well,
Big Bang could
God
be necessary.
That's not a hypothesis. It is an explanatory hypothesis. Remember that we postulate something to make sense of data. Okay. We postulate a necessary being to make sense of data.
Mm-hmm.
Now a singularity, a Big Bang singularity, is by its very nature contingent. Okay. It's something that happens in time, it can't be a necessary being. Okay. How could it be necessary? In what way could it be a necessary being?
What way could a
singularity?
It's an event of occurrence, could have been a necessity.
Necessity by what?
By its, it could have been impossible to not happen.
Zero way? Necessitated by what, though?
By just being?
A singularity is, you remember, it's something that might not have happened. There are alternative possible worlds.
But that's also
the
issue of God.
Well, not by hypothesis. By hypothesis, not the theist supposes that there's a necessary being by hypothesis.
I want to know if God has, but he may not.
Oh, well, God is hypothesized to explain the data as a necessary being. A singularity by its nature is contingent.
What if I said I hypothesize that there's a singularity that is not contingent?
Well, if you postulate a necessary singularity, then I would call that God.
Okay.
As I defined it.
So as you define God, you call that God. Necessary singularity.
Well, if you posit it as the necessary cause of the universe, then that's what I'm talking about.
Okay. 1 minute to prepare for your own.
Well, I'll begin.
Yeah.
Folks, I believe that I've been unnecessarily criticized on something. Every theistic argument that has ever been given is given in stages, and it's very typical for philosophers to give an argument for some sort of metaphysically necessary grounded being that is responsible for why the universe exists. Call that being whatever you wish. And then it's typical to argue after that to attribute further properties to that being. So Thomas Aquinas, for example, gives an argument for a first cause of the universe. And he says, this we call God. All Aquinas means to establish in his first five arguments is that there's some kind of entity that is the cause of the universe. He calls it a first cause, a first mover, and so forth. But he never attributes, in those arguments, the attributes of deity to the entity, and he thinks he's proven the existence of God. In fact, Aquinas' five ways are famously called Aquinas' five arguments for God's existence. But it's only later in his treatise that Aquinas goes on and says, now I'll have to give you an additional argument to argue that this being is both omniscient, omnipotent, and so forth. It takes long philosophical argument to establish the various properties of divinity to attribute to a necessary being. All I tried to do in my article was to counter Mr. Carrier's claim that science can explain everything. Whereby everything, he seems to mean the physical universe and all that is involved in it, whether that includes laws of nature or whether they're reducible to just events of, consisting of physical things making having changes. And I did not attempt to establish the full-blown conception of God. I believe that would take way more philosophical work. All I attempted to establish was a minimal conception of a being whose existence is separate from the universe, whose existence is necessary, therefore eternal, and therefore not material or contingent, that's responsible for the existence of the universe. I think that my argument is both valid and sound for that conclusion. Now, as to Webster's definition of God, there are many theists that would not accept that definition. There are some theists that don't think God's omniscient. There are theists that hold all kinds of different conceptions of God. All I argued for was a very minimal, scaled-down conception that I think most theists would accept. But I never claimed that I was arguing for some full-blown definition involving all the triple O properties that are sometimes attributed. I think an argument could be given and has been given, but it's a very complex process and it would take way more time. So I did not even intend to be establishing the claims about God that my opponent thinks I should have established. How long do I have for this?
You have 8 minutes.
8 minutes? Oh, okay. Well, I'm not going to keep you for 8 minutes. But if someone said, I can prove to you that there is an automobile mechanic, and so they take you to a place and show you a guy with wrenches and tools and some kind of AAA certification on his wall, it might be established, you might have proven that the guy's an automobile mechanic, but you may not have established that he has all the full-blown attributes of the definition in Webster's dictionary. The definition might have all kinds of properties that you didn't establish, that could be established by further investigation, but it still might be so that you establish the existence of an automobile mechanic. I think one can establish the existence of God just by showing that there's something beyond the physical universe that science can't recognize, that science doesn't recognize, something that's not part of the physical universe, that is responsible for its existence. I think that establishes what most people would call God. And as to its nature, I think that's a whole separate issue. So I think that which is established by my argument is that which most people would call God, even if all the attributes that are traditionally ascribed to it aren't fully worked out in the argument. And I will remind you of one thing. My argument is an explanatory argument. And remember that in an explanatory argument, we build into our explanation what we need to explain the data. So for instance, when physicists were first exploring the insides of protons and neutrons, they were convinced that inside protons and neutrons, there must be smaller particles. But they weren't sure what their nature was, and they weren't sure how they worked, and they weren't sure what to call them. But at some point, evidence accumulated. And, you know, Murray Gell-Mann came up with the name of quarks. And physicists decided that the best explanation for the behavior of protons and neutrons is that inside each proton, there are two down quarks and an up quark. And inside each neutron, there are two up quarks and a down quark. And these little quarks, although no one can ever see them, have gluons splitting between them. And they somehow exist inside the nucleons, although we've never seen them or directly detected them. Now, why do we believe there are quarks inside protons and neutrons? We can't even detect protons and neutrons directly, that is to say, in a cloud chamber or on a computer screen. We believe that they're there because that's the only way to explain the data. The data on computers in particle accelerators. You know, so that physicists shoot particles at huge, enormous speeds in accelerators, and then they get all kinds of data. And the only way to explain that data is by supposing that protons and neutrons have little particles in them. Particles called quarks. The data shows that they exist. Well, they exist because that's the best explanation of the data. Now, there are separate theories as to the nature of quarks. And so we attribute all kinds of properties to quarks by further theories. Strangeness, charm, and so forth. And I'm giving a similar argument for God's existence, along with Plato and Aristotle and Aquinas and others, that the physical universe in its entirety, the sum total of it, with everything that's involved in its being, which may include the laws of physics, the laws of mathematics, can't be explained adequately unless we suppose at the bottom there's some sort of necessary being responsible for that existence. And the argument posits this being because that's the only way to make sense of the data being the physical universe. And it's no different than what physicists do in the laboratory. It's explanatory reasoning. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll yield to my opponent.
Okay.
Do
you want me to do the
opponent has said, just briefly to get this off first, when he was given an idea of force, he said that these are the only way to explain it. This is not very well addressed compared to the God hypothesis. This is a false analogy. The only way to explain them, or the force, there's many ways to explain the universe. As I said, it can come into existence, Big Bang, yada yada yada. He's actually said that God might not be contingent. He said maybe. How could I be satisfied if he could be contingent? He's not proven to be necessary. It could be a singularity point that is necessary. It could be nothing that is necessary. We don't know. He said he could use Big Bang as God. The Big Bang, if it was a necessary singularity and all that. I wouldn't exactly have a problem with that, although I would have a problem with believing it, because it is not yet proven. Nothing is yet proven, no explanation is proven to a satisfactory degree. Just that there has to be an explanation is an evidence. There must be an explanation, you have to have an answer, is not an answer. You must preserve your veracity. You cannot claim theism, because that is belief. You can't believe anything until it's proven. You have to preserve your veracity. You have to remain atheist about it. Do not believe until you know. If you want to call the Big Bang God, wait until it's proven before you call before you say you believe the Big Bang, you believe it's God. I'd also like to ask Herrick, why not use Big Bang as his God then? This Big Bang is so much simpler than these other necessary beings that he seems to want to believe in. Says he'd take more arguments to meet the other definition of God, or take other arguments to meet other characteristics of the other God. I'll be there to cross-examine those, if he'll debate me again. In order to actually prove his assertion, he'd have actually needed to present them today, but he didn't get around to it, so that's fine. On another topic, he used a lot of metaphors. He said, there must be something responsible for the creation of the universe. Something can't be responsible for everything in the universe. Something can't be responsible for time, for example. He believes that physicists claim that time came into existence at a moment. That's not possible. To come into existence is to have a beginning. You can't have a beginning unless there is time to begin on. If there's no time, then there's nothing. Everything's frozen. Time must exist. It must have always existed. It must always continue to exist. It can never have been created. Because in order to be created, it has to have a beginning. It has to have a creator who had the choice to create time, which he couldn't have, because he would have had to exist on time. Time cannot be created, and it is a necessity. It must exist, must have always existed. And theism does not explain it. Pretty much it. Now, this is my last words in this debate. This is my last rebuttal, for example. Dr. Paul Herrick gives a final word. In that final word, he does not have the ability to bring in new information. Material. If he does, that's considered his final debate, and I should have an opportunity to respond to it. So I may object if you start bringing up, like what you did with the quarks, that he bring in new material, and I would object if you didn't even ask to go. He understands. So, there are questions left in the origins of the universe. We don't know how we created. We don't know if God is contingent or not. We don't know if the Big Bang is contingent or not. We don't even know if there was a Big Bang for absolute certain. We don't know much. We can't make any claims yet. We can hypothesize, but that is just a hypothesis. It's not yet proven. The claim
and it needed to explain everything, I don't feel like the universe has been explained. I think it's been guessed at, poked at with a stick. We have a long ways to go, and I don't actually think Dr. Harris disagrees with me on the subject. I think it's more of an issue of semantics. That's pretty much it. You have to have evidence that there's solid logic, have to have reason. So, that's it.
Okay, my final comments are these. First of all, I can't accept the idea of the Big Bang being simple, even though it is understood by physicists as a singularity, and here's the reason. Physicists say that out of the Big Bang comes this entire universe, and so it's something that gave birth to out of its own being, out of its own insides, 10 to the 52nd power protons, and large numbers of particles. So something like that I can't understand as simple, metaphysically simple. Second of all, I do not claim that there must be a cause of the universe. You may have misspoken there. Many philosophers, in making the cosmological argument, have used a principle called the principle of sufficient reason, which claims that for every fact there must be an explanation. I'm not claiming that. All I'm doing is applying explanatory reasoning to the question, why does the physical universe exist? All I'm doing is applying the same kind of reasoning we use in everyday life. When we reason to the best explanation, I'm applying that to the question, why does the universe exist? I'm not claiming there must be an explanation. I'm claiming to make sense of this universe, we must suppose there's a necessary being without a new being. I misspoke when I said you can call God contingent if you want. I misspoke in the following sense. The argument I gave has as an explanatory hypothesis a necessary being, and that I call God. If you want to say, well, maybe God's contingent, and by that means some different being, that's fine with me. But the being I'm speaking of is the one that I've posited, along with most theists, a necessary being. And necessary means that it can't come into or out of existence, and its existence isn't dependent on anything outside of itself. And I don't think we can attain explanatory closure as to the question, why does the universe exist, without reference to such a being. I can't be satisfied tracing everything back to something, like the Big Bang or like some physical process, that itself might not have happened, that itself is contingent. Something that we can imagine other possible worlds in which it doesn't exist. In other words, something that has what von Prossen calls a contrast class. Cases where it wouldn't be alternatives to it. So, I deny that there must be an explanation. I'm only claiming that it's reasonable to apply explanatory reasoning to the question. It's something we do every day, and that the best explanation when we do that is that there's a necessary being, the cause of the universe. That's my closing answer.
All right, that's it.